This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
First thing I'm always going to ask is, does your child snore? Do they have any pauses in their breathing consistently? Like not just when they have a cold or something. And if that's happening, then I'm immediately going to send for a referral for a sleep evaluation, whether it be from an ENT, a pediatric sleep center, because what we see happen a lot of times, especially in like the 4 to 6 age range, is that their tonsils and adenoids begin to crowd their airway. Their airway doesn't grow as fast as the tonsils and adenoids do. And as a result, that crowds the airway, there's more sleep disruption, more sleep apnea happens. And if we actually treat the sleep apnea, guess what happens? The behavioral issues.
Welcome back to the Peds Doc Talk podcast. This podcast continues to grow because of you. The fact that you return every week to listen to our conversations that I have with guests, the fact that you leave reviews. So thank you so much for joining me today. I get to chat with the most incredible people to help guide us in our parenting journey. And today is a return guest, Dr. Shelby Harris. She's a licensed clinical psychologist, board certified and specializing in behavioral sleep medicine. And she was on the show already talking about if children can outgrow not being an independent sleeper. It's an amazing conversation. So make sure to check that out. But today we're talking about, is it sleep apnea, ADHD, or is it a lack of sleep boundaries? Thank you so much for joining me today, Dr. Shelby.
Thank you, Dr. Moon. I'm happy to be back.
Yeah. So if anyone has not listened to the other episode, tell us a little bit more about yourself and why you do the work that you do.
So I'm a clinical psychologist by training, and I have a subspecialty board certification in behavioral sleep medicine. So what that means is I treat sleep issues in babies through older adults using evidence-based non-medication approaches. So I worked for a long while at a pretty big sleep center in New York City, where I ran the insomnia and behavioral sleep medicine clinic. So I treated all different ages of kids, adults, older adults, for insomnia, sleep issues without using medication, nightmares, all different sort of stuff. And I worked along with the MDs there. So we really try in sleep medicine to not use medication, believe it or not, a lot of the times. And that's where I fit in. I have a private practice now in Westchester, New York, where I see people online all the time from New York City.
I love that philosophy because I understand sometimes medication is needed for many different things, but we got to figure out what's going on. And I think we'll talk about that today. But, you know, in the other episode, we talked about older children. Is it anxiety? Is there something else? We'll talk about more medical things here. And so before we just throw medication, we have to kind of figure out and understand that big picture. And I think that's such an important philosophy. And I'm going to admit it, like with the current healthcare model, many times it's quick to medicate and including children, right? Like I'll have parents ask me like, hey, my child's not sleeping. Can I give Benadryl or can I give melatonin? And I'm like, well, there's a lot of deep conversation we have to have about this. Like, what is going on? I maybe sometimes have used melatonin, but there's a reason. And it's not just my first line. We have to figure out what is the core of the sleep issue. So love that.
Yeah.
And the conversation we're having today, I think, is a really important one because, you know, I get parents coming into the office with a child, let's say a 4-year-old, 5-year-old, you know, they'll come in and the child is still not sleeping, quote unquote, on their own or waking up super tired, even if they slept the whole night. There's just a lot of things. And parents are like, well, you know, I'm putting them to bed at 10. And is it me not setting these boundaries or is there something else going on? So that's the conversation we're having today. So where would you kind of want to start with this? Like, what do people kind of have to look at when they're looking at sleep as a whole for their child?
So I always first and foremost just think about age of the child, what's considered quote unquote normal sleep amounts, sleep durations. And there's a range. Not everyone falls in like the 11 to 13 hour range. You know, some people are outliers, but I always try to make sure that they're consistent in general with their sleep hygiene. They're not having a lot of sugar right before bed. They're having a consistent bedtime wake time. Now, if the child is sleeping through the night, and they're waking up really tired. One of the big things that we see a lot talking about whether Medicaid or not, especially in ages like 4 to 6, 4 to 7, we see a lot of behavioral issues start to happen at this age range. So there's a sleepy child. This is the key, is the sleepy child doesn't always look sleepy. They don't usually look sleepy. They look hyperactive. And so what happens is in some of these kids, or a lot of these kids, they're getting mislabeled as having behavioral issues and having potentially ADHD or other outburst kind of behavioral issues. If I think the kid is actually sleeping well at night or sleeping enough at night, but is having a lot of behavioral issues, first thing I'm always going to ask is, does your child snore? Do they have any pauses in their breathing consistently? Like not just when they have a cold or something. And if that's happening, then I'm immediately going to send for a referral for a sleep evaluation, whether it be from an ENT, a pediatric sleep center, because what we see happen a lot of times, especially in like the 4 to 6 age range, is that their tonsils and adenoids begin to crowd their airway. Their airway doesn't grow as fast as their tonsils and adenoids do. And as a result, that crowds the airway. There's more sleep disruption, more sleep apnea happens. And if we actually treat the sleep apnea, guess what happens? The behavioral issues tend to get better. Now, that doesn't mean you can't have ADHD or a behavioral issue as well as sleep apnea. You can. But I think a lot of times we're quick to diagnose a behavioral problem without seeing how the sleep is actually factoring in. So first and foremost, does your child snore, any sort of pauses in breathing, anything like that, using the bathroom a lot at night? That can be another symptom. Anything like that should make you immediately go for a sleep evaluation. Now, the other thing we start to think about too is, right, it's like a little bit of chicken egg. So if we're starting to talk about not like sleep limits, right? Or just not getting enough sleep, or your child needs to sleep with you, or just won't fall asleep until a certain time, limit setting at that time, right? So your child's stalling. So is there a lot of that going on that's causing sleep deprivation, which can then lead to behavioral issues, right? Mm-hmm. So you want to try and treat whatever you can at night to get your child sleeping more. And then if that's not working, is there actually a behavioral issue going on? So sometimes ADHD, what we see a lot of times is there can be, with ADHD kids, there can be trouble with falling asleep at night.
Yeah.
So I always try to work on the sleep first, trying to get them, at least even if you have to be there for sleep, trying to get them on a better, just not sleep deprived anymore. And then you can slowly remove your presence and work with a practitioner if you need to help you do that. But let's try and get them enough sleep routinely. And if the quality and the quantity is okay, but they're still having behavioral issues during the day, then you want to start thinking about what's causing the behavioral issues because you're ruling sleep out.
What's the youngest, maybe you don't know, haven't had this experience, but what's the youngest you've seen sleep apnea in your practice? Because we're talking about 4 to 6. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't diagnose it and treat it myself because it's not my area.
Right.
But I mean, even little baby, I mean, sometimes babies were born prematurely, right? Mm-hmm. They have sleep apnea and they're put on little baby CPAPs in the hospital. So all different ages. Sometimes it can just be the way that their airway is designed. I mean, we have babies with it too, but we see it very commonly in that 4 to 6 age range, to the point where I was lucky enough to be a part of this groundbreaking study by Susan Redline and a lot of other people called the CHAT study, which was a study that was in I was on it as one of the sites at Montefiore in like 2005, I want to say, don't hold me to that, for a few years. And we did neuropsychological testing on kids to see if we just watched and waited for a few years for them to grow so that their adenoids and tonsils are not as crowded anymore, if that helped, or if doing a surgery to take out their tonsils really helped with the behavioral issues and learning during that time. And we found that actually intervening at that age, younger, is better for their behavioral outcomes, for learning. They get more out of school instead of just waiting a few years for them to potentially outgrow it. And then the other thing to add on to that we're seeing a lot of is we see a lot more obesity in kids. Mm-hmm. And we're seeing it in younger kids, but also especially in the preteen and teenager population. And that can be something that can lead to sleep apnea. So we're seeing a lot more of that in kids because of that reason as well.
Yeah. And, you know, you talked about the whole chicken and the egg, right? And the big thing is the ADHD component, right? Because it's, you know, you're like, okay, is the ADHD causing them not to be able to sleep? And then the cycle goes where they're, you know, having more kind of ADHD type symptoms, or is it that the lack of sleep is causing the behavioral symptoms?
Yes.
You know, it's a very hard diagnosis sometimes. And it is a lot of question asking, like what's going on, and also just getting a true, you know, diagnosis of ADHD. For everyone listening, we're not going to get into the diagnoses into detail, but I have another episode that I did about ADHD and can toddlers have ADHD. The one thing I, you know, what we see in like under 4, you know, we talked about like that 4 to 6, noisy mouth breathing, you know, that doesn't mean it's sleep apnea per se, but it could be something we want to intervene. And it is kind of in that line of an airway issue, right? So if you do see your infant that is like mouth breathing, noisy, and just constantly mouth breathing past that, especially past that initial newborn phase. Sometimes I do see it in the newborn, but I'm talking like a 4-month-old, a 5-month-old, like an infant, toddler, mouth is open all the time while they're sleeping. I would talk to your clinician about it, because would you agree that that's something that is kind of something 100%. That we want to monitor? Yeah.
100%. And there's like all these memes and stuff that'll go around on Instagram and online of like, oh, look at how cute this is with my child is like sitting with their like mouth open while they're watching TV and stuff. And I look at it as, okay, well, that's probably a sleep disorder issue or a mouth breathing issue that needs to get evaluated. And the thing is too, a lot of people don't think about this, but when they're having their mouth open, a lot of times that can also change the way that their airway develops. It can change the way that their jaw develops, their face develops. So we really want to work on helping them to close the mouth for sure when it comes to sleep at night. So all ages, that's why I tried for so long when people are quick to diagnose ADHD, I'm always like, does your child mouth breathe? Do they snore? Do they have pauses in their breathing? Just ask those questions first, and then it can give you a lot of information. So for example, like my daughter, she's 8 now, but when she was 4 or 5 years old, because I'm on top of it, I know the literature, she would mouth breathe a lot and she would snore a little bit at night. And so I took her to our ENT, who's amazing in my area, and he found out that she had enlarged adenoids. Now, did we need to do surgery immediately? No. So we watched and waited. She actually used medication to help because she was congested a lot of the time and had allergies, and the medication helped to reduce the adenoids. So we did that, and that was one other thing, and that helped with the mouth breathing. It helped with her snoring at night, and I know that she didn't have to have surgery. So there are definitely options, but you don't want to ignore it, not at all.
As a pediatrician, mom, and podcaster, I want to share with you a podcast I recently discovered. It's called Understood Explains, and this season of the show is hosted by teacher and special education expert Juliana Ertube, and it's all about how to navigate individual education plans, also known as IEPs. The latest season of Understood Explains covers topics like how to tell if your child needs an IEP, and it busts common myths about special education. I listened to an episode called The Difference Between IEPs and 504 Plans, and I learned so much that I honestly didn't know before. I now feel I can better explain these to my patients and their families and better support them in their neurodiversity journey. Navigating ADHD, dyslexia, and other learning and thinking differences can be confusing, and this podcast helps to validate these struggles and provide actionable tips that are useful for parents, teachers, and clinicians. To listen to Understood Explains, search for Understood Explains in your podcast app. That's Understood Explains. Have you heard about the terrible twos or threenagers? Yes, the toddler years can be tough. There is no denying that any phase of parenting can be really hard. There may be picky eating, tantrums, and struggles with potty training. But there is a lot of amazing things that you will see your toddler do during these years. I want you to enter the toddler years understanding toddler development and behavior so you can better approach tricky situations with your child. With resources on picky eating, potty training, tantrums, and other common toddler behavior like sleep refusal and toddler development, the toddler resources here at Peds Doc Talk aim to provide you with the knowledge you need to, dare I say, find some or a lot of enjoyment in the toddler years. For more on my on-demand courses, make sure to visit pedsdoctalk.com and check out resources for whatever you need. Have a friend? It also makes a perfect gift. Visit pedsdoctalk.com and click courses for more.
No one told us the truth about parenthood. Why? This is the podcast everyone needed before they had kids, because now that those little ones are here, whew, there is a lot to unpack. I'm Rachel Shepard-Ota, and I am your host for the podcast No One Told Us, where we tell the truth about parenting and let you in on all the stuff you really should have known about before having kids. I am the founder of Hey Sleepy Baby, but this podcast is so much more than sleep. We'll be diving into all the topics that you really care about and need to know while you do your best job raising those adorable, tidy humans. Our goal is to just make you feel less alone and less overwhelmed. There are so many things that no one tells us before becoming a parent, and I think that we should really pull back the curtain on becoming a first-time or second-time mom or dad to share the good, the bad, and the ugly. We'll have a little education, a little fun, and a whole lot of heart that goes into each and every episode. So join me and our amazing guests each week to hear us talk about what no one told us.
So she had mouth breathing and snoring, or just the mouth breathing?
Yes. Yeah, both.
And did it affect her behavior?
She, not so much. It was interesting. It didn't really affect her behavior, but I was definitely concerned about her sleep and quality of sleep at night. I still brought it up. And she, lo and behold, had enlarged adenoids.
Personally hitting home too, because our son is, at the time of this recording, our son is almost 4 and he sleeps a lot. Okay. Like, and I tell my husband's like, wow, he's such a good sleeper. And I'm like, I love that you're saying that, but I am like you watching for these things, right? The way he's sleeping, the sounds. And so when this happened with your daughter, was she sleeping in a separate room than you?
Yes.
So you would just hear it from outside the door, or you would just hear on the monitor or something?
Once in a while, I would hear it on the monitor when she was younger, but it wasn't so bad until she really hit that kind of 4-year-old age. I noticed it, honestly, when we would all have to sleep together when we were traveling and stuff like that.
Yes.
We're like, she had to share a room with my son, and he's older, he's 6 years older. He'd be like, Mom, she was snoring at night. It's not good. So that's when we picked up on it for sure.
That's a good thing.
She would sit in front of the TV with her mouth, which apparently I did as a kid too, and then had to go to speech therapy for it. But she'll sit in front of the TV with her mouth like wide open and just breathe.
It obviously makes a lot of sense, especially with that open mouth breathing and not using the nose. I mean, the nose is there for a reason, right? Where proper breath taking should be in through the nose, out through the mouth, you know? And so I think it's really an important area that can go often missed. Especially in that infant toddler age group where, I'm going to be honest, even pediatricians will dismiss it sometimes and say, that's normal. But no, I agree with you. I have become very in tune with that, because like I said, I think we often miss sleep issues and, you know, chalk it up to behavior, or like even not sleeping can lead to anxiety, you know, talking about anxiety too, right? We know that sleep is very impactful. And again, it doesn't mean you need to, like your example of your daughter, that you need to get your adenoids out tomorrow, but it is a important, you know, holistic approach, if you will, to sleep.
Yes.
And, you know, is there anything else you'd want to add that we may have missed upon in terms of the sleep apnea, ADHD, and, you know, parenting with sleep?
I think when it comes to the app or the ADHD stuff as well, is that, right, if you've done whatever you can to help your child sleep, even if you have to be there with them and they still can't fall asleep easily, they're needing a lot of, like, it feels like it's taking a lot of effort to help them sleep. If you know that there is ADHD going on that has been diagnosed, what we do see is sometimes when we were talking about melatonin at the beginning, right? Sometimes there is a role for melatonin.
Absolutely.
We see melatonin having more of a role with kids who have autism and kids who have ADHD. So then it's really, if you've tried the behavioral stuff and it just is not working or not working well enough, right? The goal is to get them sleeping. And like I said, we always want to do behavioral first, but sometimes there is a issue with some of these kids where we do need to use melatonin. So that's when we think about using the smallest dose possible, right? I can't tell you how many kids I have who are taking 5-10 milligrams just because it's in a gummy form. That's way too much. So we're talking like a milligram, half a milligram if you're offended, of melatonin, taking it a half hour to an hour before bed to help with that. Doesn't mean they're going to have to be on it long term, but sometimes it can help to settle the sleep a little bit more and then help with the behavioral issues during the day. So it's definitely something to consider with your doctor's approval.
And as a physician, I could not agree more, because what I see, like I said at the beginning, is that I often see parents, even on my social media, like in stories, say, hey, my child's not sleeping. I want to give him melatonin. And like I said, I'm not against it, because I have in those exact examples, I have a good amount of children who have ADHD and autism who need it, and it's fine. But we've made that diagnosis. We've worked on other things, sleep hygiene. We've worked on the fact that we've excluded things like sleep apnea, had that diagnosis of ADHD or autism. And that's the underlying message, is that we've done our due diligence and not just medicated and potentially masked an underlying other condition that we could treat. And so that's a huge thing that I see as well.
Exactly. There you go.
Oh, man. So this was great. I love this, because like I mentioned, I think a lot of times parents put a lot of guilt on themselves. Like, you know, the topic was about, you know, am I just not doing enough? Like, am I not strict enough with boundaries? But there is a reality that sometimes there is something medical going on. And so the mouth breathing, the snoring, the noisiness, like, and I want to be clear, because I have talked about this on my social, that newborns are noisy. There's no denying that a newborn under the age of, I would say, 12 weeks is noisy, but it should get better. Like, it should not be that they're always noisy. They're always making these sounds. Like, it should improve, and we should see sleep start to stretch a little bit. And if you're not, and they're noisy and they're making these snoring sounds. Ooh, we got to evaluate. Yeah, what would be your final message for everyone listening today?
Sleep is the bedrock with which everything else is built on. So don't ignore it. And if you think something is off and someone's telling you, oh, don't worry about it, it's fine, keep getting another opinion.
Yeah.
Like, you don't just ignore it if you notice something's off.
So in your opinion, would you start with a pediatrician or clinician?
Yeah.
And if obviously from there, it would be using people like a behavioral sleep specialist or a sleep study or an ENT if needed, right?
Yeah. It depends on what it is that you're trying to treat. Like if someone's coming to me and they think they have apnea, I'm going to refer to peds. I mean, like we went to a peds ENT who does a lot of tonsils and adenoid surgery, you know, but you could go to a pediatric sleep center. There are a lot of different places where you could go.
Yeah. And for anyone who's unsure about what to do, and I like to talk about this because a lot of our listeners are like, it's me, but I don't know where to start. So I agree. Yeah. I would start with your clinician. If your clinician is dismissing you, like Dr. Shelby said, I understand that this has happened. If you're being dismissed, ask your clinician if they have somebody else that they recommend or on your own, get another opinion. Or you could, if your insurance allows it, self-refer yourself to, you know, a sleep center or sleep specialist. But having a sleep study, usually that can be done through an ENT office in my area. I think maybe where you live as well, where they are going to do an evaluation before just saying, we got to take out your tonsils or adenoids. Oh, I want to be clear and get that evaluation to see what's going on. And if you think it's ADHD and your clinician is, again, not pursuing that, behavioral therapy, psychologists, those are your avenues to kind of deal with the sleep apnea, the ADHD, but you should not have to struggle or suffer. I agree with that.
Yeah, for sure.
Well, I love chatting with you. You are an inspiration to me because of your media presence as well. I just love everything that you share. Where can everyone stay in touch with you and get more information about your resources?
So you can find me easily on Instagram at sleepdocshelby. I'm on TikTok, but not as frequently. So same thing at sleepdocshelby. And go to my website, DR like doctor. So drshelbyharris.com.
I love it. I will be attaching all of this information to the show notes. And again, thank you for joining me today to have this amazing conversation.
Thanks for having me.
And for everyone listening, if you love the episode, make sure you leave a review. The reviews really help this podcast to reach more people. And also just call out Dr. Shelby and her amazing information. I love showing our guests all the love. And I'll probably have her back on for more conversations surrounding sleep.
Thank you.
Thank you for tuning in for this week's episode. As always, please leave a review. Share this episode with a friend, share it on your social media. Make sure to follow me at Peds Doc Talk on Instagram and subscribe to my YouTube channel, Peds Doc Talk TV. We'll talk to you soon.
Hey there, I'm Debbie Reber, the founder of Tilt Parenting and the author of the book Differently Wired. The mission of Tilt is to change the way neurodivergence, whether that's having a learning disability, having ADHD, being gifted, autistic, or some combination of all of the above, is perceived and experienced so differently wired kids and the parents like us raising them can truly thrive. On the Tilt Parenting Podcast, I get to talk with authors, therapists, educators, and parenting experts who are committed to this mission. I ask the questions my listeners are most curious about when it comes to supporting our kids. And in turn, my guests share strategies for challenges, out-of-the-box ideas for navigating school, best practices for therapies, tips for advocating, and so many thoughtful insights on what it really takes to help our kids grow up feeling seen and respected so they can create awesome lives for themselves. I know that raising a differently wired kid can feel overwhelming and isolating, but I promise you, you are not alone, and it can feel so much better. If you're on this parenting journey, come listen to Tilt Parenting. Together, we can shift this paradigm and show up for our exceptional kids with hope, possibility, and joy.